At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are people in every major case who hold a kind of truth that never really makes its way into the investigative files, not because they're hiding it and not because they're unreliable, but because no one in authority ever thought, maybe we should ask them the right questions. In the Alec Murdaugh case, the Murdaugh murders, that person is Blanca Simpson. And what she says now, after years of silence, after watching the trial from the sidelines, after sitting on memories no one ever tried to pull out of her, is something that's been drowned out by all the noise surrounding this case. Blanca, by the way, in case you're wondering, who's Blanca? She was the housekeeper. The housekeeper after Gloria. Gloria is the one who died. You're like, what about the housekeeper? Isn't she dead? No, that was Gloria Satterfield. Blanca was the one who took the job after Gloria passed away. So what does Blanca say in this new memoir that she talks about her experiences at Moselle in? She doesn't believe Alec Murdaugh acted alone. And think about this for a second. This is coming from someone probably better than anyone. Better than anyone alive who was close to this family. Unlike anyone alive who was close to this family. Alec had friends, he had relatives, he had this, he had that. Blanca was there every day. She was seeing the most intimate moments when she should and shouldn't have. She was just there. So sure, things had been said, things were not said, she was part of everyday life. And when you get to part of everyday life with somebody, just think of that. Think of your own life. Think of everyday life. If you had somebody who was going around doing chores, doing the things around the house to help out room to room, you're having conversations, you're living your life. They're learning the intimate details of you no one else ever sees. And you're not always the most guarded when that person is around either. So it's not always a show being put on, as many narcissists will do in front of their friends and family, as Alec did when he knew the spotlight was on him. No. When your housekeeper, which is what she was, is literally there all the time. They pick up on things. They pick up on things that no one else will know, and their opinion matters. Why on earth she wasn't talked to by Sled in more detail? That's a good question. But let's get into this, and I want to hear your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. please press subscribe. We're over 80,000 subscribers now. We're trying to get to 100,000, hopefully by the end of the year. We'll keep our fingers crossed, but you hitting subscribe would certainly help in that process. So please do hit subscribe and let us know your thoughts in the comments section. So she doesn't believe Alec acted alone. Not in the staging, not in the cleanup, not in the logistics, not in the manipulation that followed. When you walk through her reasoning, the small truths that only someone inside that home could recognize, you start to understand why she came to that conclusion and why she keeps repeating it with such calm conviction. To understand where she's coming from, you have to understand who she was to the family. She wasn't the housekeeper who popped in once a month, dusted a bookshelf, and then left. She was woven into the daily and weekly structure of the Murdaugh household. She worked for them for many years. She knew where every shirt belonged, how every towel was folded, what was normal in the kitchen, what wasn't. She knew Maggie's rituals. She knew her dislikes, her habits, her rhythms. She knew how Maggie parked her car, how she organized her purse, how she prepared for bed, and how she traveled between properties, and how she liked the house to look when she walked in the door. And she had affection for them. Authentic affection, as one does when you're in that role. You become part of someone's life. She loved Maggie. She adored Paul, and she trusted Alec. She does not enter the story as someone looking to blow up the family. She enters as someone who once believed sincerely that Alec could not have harmed the people he claimed to love most, and that makes her shift all the more devastating. The morning after the murders, Alec calls her early. His voice is shaky. He sounds broken. She believes him immediately. Why wouldn't she? At this point in the story, he's still the charismatic lawyer she worked beside for years, not the man later convicted of murdering his wife and son. She drives to Moselle expecting to find chaos, grief, devastation, but what she finds instead is something far stranger. She steps out of her vehicle, and the first thing she notices is Maggie's Mercedes SUV. It's parked in the wrong place. Not kind of wrong, not close enough. You know, you make that turn, and it's like, oh, I'm on the line. No. Not close enough wrong. It's wrong in a way that triggers the part of her brain trying to recognize patterns. Maggie didn't park there. Not on a good day, not on a rush day, not ever. Blanca can look at that spot and feel Maggie's absence. Someone else drove that car. Someone else put it there. Someone who didn't know her habits. She enters the house, and this is where the story shifts from grief to suspicion, slowly at first, then in sharp, painful jolts. In the laundry room, she sees pajamas and underwear on the floor. It looks staged to an outsider, like someone arranged a scene of a woman preparing for bed. But Blanca instantly feels the wrongness of it. Maggie didn't place clothes like that. Maggie didn't leave underwear paired with pajamas on the floor. Maggie didn't even wear underwear to bed. That's the strange intimacy of the housekeeper's world. She knows things the police don't, things the lawyers don't, things the documentaries don't. That underwear should not be there. Those pajamas should not be there. The entire picture should not exist. So who on earth is setting out pajamas and underwear for Maggie? It's certainly something Alec didn't do. He never talks about doing that. I was out getting Maggie's underwear and her jammies all set so she could snuggle up in bed after she came in from the kennels. Maggie wasn't even staying there that night. So why would these items be set out in such a way that Maggie never even did herself? Why would one do that? Just changing it up. Tonight I want to
come back up to the house that I'm not planning on staying at and getting into pajamas and underwear that I don't ever wear to bed? And if Alec did it in some sort of weird, let me make you more comfortable here, Maggie way, then why have we never heard a word of it? Because it's a critical detail. Because it's set up by someone trying to make comfort and planning look like it was existing, like someone was planning on coming back up from the kennels, that they were working on something else, that they were going to get right back to it, that they weren't going to their death. Who would have done that? Probably someone who knew that they weren't ever coming back up to the house. And that detail is critical because whoever staged that tableau did not understand Maggie at all. And Blanca is clear. This wasn't sloppy staging. It was someone trying to make an argument without ever using words. Maggie was staying here tonight. Maggie was settled in. Someone wanted investigators to see a woman who was comfortable at Moselle that evening. Someone who had unpacked. Someone who had prepared for bedtime. The problem is that someone wasn't Maggie. Maggie wasn't comfortable at Moselle. Maggie wasn't planning on staying at Moselle that evening, from everything that we know. Maggie wasn't preparing for bedtime. Blanca instead sees the outline of a stranger. And then she moves into the kitchen. Maggie didn't clean the kitchen at night. Not like this. Blanca knows there were them dinner, dishes, pots, utensils. They weren't magically cleaned and put away like a commercial for perfect homemaking. Maggie soaked things. Maggie left things for morning. Maggie had a system. But this kitchen, this was arranged by someone with intent. Someone who wanted the space to look handled. Someone who cared about the optics of the home's condition. These aren't big, dramatic discoveries. They're tiny, microscopic anomalies. So small you never pick up unless you lived this job. Unless you were Maggie, Paul, or Alec, or the housekeeper. These are the only people who know these things, what's in place and what's not. But this is where Blanca's training as a Navy veteran and former corrections officer comes into play. Those careers train you to look at the small stuff. The small stuff tells you everything. She doesn't tell herself, Alec did this. Not yet. She pushes away. She pushes it down. She cannot attach that level of deceit to the man she thought she knew. But you can't ignore the fact that something feels wrong, and the wrongness feels shared. Then there's the August conversation. This is when she begins to realize that she isn't dealing with an incident, or that she's not dealing with an innocent man grieving a tragic loss. She's dealing with someone who is guiding her memory, coaching her, pressuring her gently, but unmistakably, to remember him wearing a Vineyard Vines shirt. This is a part that we did hear about in the trial and is portrayed in the new series as well. A shirt she is sure he did not wear that night. She straightened the collar on the shirt he actually wore. She handled it. She can feel the fabric in her mind. And the shirt he told her to remember, it never resurfaced. Neither did the one from Paul's Snapchat video hours before the murders. Neither did the Edesto Beach towel. She doesn't lose faith in Alec. She starts losing faith in the timeline. Because a timeline doesn't leave room for one man to do everything that needed to be done to erase evidence. Laundry, staging, disposing of clothing, repositioning vehicles, adjusting interior spaces, managing a 911 narrative, speaking to officers, showering, cleaning himself twice, moving between locations, hiding items that were never found. She knows the time required. She does these tasks for a living. She knows what can be done alone and what requires assistance. And she knows the aftermath was too coordinated for one person to have done it alone. Then there's a moment after the funerals that locks it in for her. The moment most people overlook, she sees a woman she does not recognize walking around the properties as if it belonged to her, not mourning, not comforting, not visiting, walking around like an owner inspecting her land. Blanca writes that this woman moved with entitlement, broadcasting a kind of silent calm on the home. The detail is eerie. It's out of place. And Blanca pairs that memory with her belief that Alec had help. She doesn't accuse the woman of anything. She doesn't imply she killed Maggie or Paul. But what she implies is more upsetting. That there were people in Alec's world who felt comfortable enough to behave that way in the aftermath. People who weren't strangers to the deeper layers of the Murdaugh family. People who could be near that house and feel ownership that wasn't theirs. And then comes a part that still makes her angry. Nobody interviewed her. She alleges not investigators, not deputies, not SLED, nobody. She, the person who understood that house better than anyone else, was ignored. Even when she tried to volunteer information, she says she was brushed aside. She was, in her words, just the Mexican housekeeper. Dismissible, overlooked, invisible to the system. And because no one bothered to ask her what she saw, the possibility of an accomplice was never explored. Not by police, not by prosecutors, not by anyone but her, sitting in silence, trying to reconcile what she saw with what the state later claimed. And think about that for a second. I think a lot of us still wonder, did he do all this by himself? Was there an accomplice? And you would think, well, they must have talked to everybody. They must have dug into every single person imaginable on a case this high profile. And then you find out you didn't talk to the person that was like right there, closer than any other still living soul. Or did that information not fit a narrative that one wanted to go down when prosecuting Alec Murdaugh? Would that have created too much reasonable doubt, too many questions for a jury? Too much, yeah, maybe, but what ifs that the defense of Alec Murdaugh could have used in a trial that may not have resulted in a conviction? So it's better off to leave those little tidbits over here, no matter how much the Mexican lady says. And I'm saying that satirically. I'm saying that in a way of how arrogant and ignorant it is to look at someone in that sort of light as just the Mexican lady. How stupid can you be? To write somebody off, to push them away because of their ethnicity. Because they don't look exactly like you. She must not know much around these Moselle parts, does she? The ignorance of people is always stunning, isn't it? Then there's the towel. The beach towel she washed, dried, folded, and placed on a high shelf the morning of the murders. The towel that should have stayed in the laundry room until she moved it again. That towel that she later saw clear as day in the passenger seat of Alec's Suburban on police body cam footage. When she sees that towel, her world shifts. That towel didn't teleport. Someone got it. Someone used it. Someone removed it. Someone helped eliminate it after. And then she starts connecting all the missing items. Shirts, towels, shoes, any fabric with potential DNA. Gone! All of it. And she can't let go of this one conclusion. Someone else was there to help him remove those things. Someone else's hands touched the aftermath. And then she writes that letter in the book's epilogue. It's not a letter of vengeance. It's not a letter of anger. It's a letter of heartbreak. A letter of someone talking to the ghost of a man she once admired. She asked him when he lost himself, when the greed overcame him, when ambition became poisonous, when he became capable of this level of betrayal to his wife, to his son, to his surviving family, to everyone who ever believed in him. But woven into that letter is the quiet, steady drumbeat of her certainty. The aftermath was not the work of one person. She knows this because she knows the house. She knows the chores. She knows the logistics. She knows the time frames. She knows the movement. She knows the habits, and she knows Maggie's truth. And she knows when something was done by someone who didn't understand Maggie at all. She doesn't speculate who helped Alex. She never names a soul. She doesn't need to. Her point is simple. Whoever assisted him, the evidence of their presence is in the inconsistencies, the staging, the timeline, the missing items, the vehicle placement, the body language of the unknown woman, and the silence that followed. Because stage details are not made by coincidence. Missing evidence doesn't disappear by accidents. Cars don't move themselves. And Alec Murdaugh did not have the time, skill, or emotional stability that night to manage everything she later found alone. In Blanca's mind, the story we've been told is incomplete. Not wrong, just incomplete. Because in the middle of all the chaos, all the legal drama, all the headlines, there exists a quiet, steady, unshakable truth known only to the housekeeper who walked into Moselle the next morning. The aftermath was not the footprint of one man. And that, in Blanca's view, is a part of the story no one has ever fully confronted. What do you think? Did Alec have help? Was there another person involved in this? In the murders? In the aftermath? In the planning? Or did he somehow make it all happen on his own? In his drug-riddled mind, got that extra burst of energy and just managed to go super speed and take care of so many things and make things look very specific ways to try and throw other people off. What happened that night? Tell me what your thoughts are in the comment section on YouTube. Again, if you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That is where you'll find us. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Until next time. I am Tony Bruschi, and we'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists, too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.